retail, realty, and the reality of the job market.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, the first look at what's affecting the broader economy just a few minutes into the trading day. So let me ask this question. Where's Wall Street? Up it is at this point. The S&P 500 up about 1%. Same for the NASDAQ, up about 17 points. And the Dow up 73 points, up nearly 0.75% at 88.12. European shares are mostly higher right now. Asian markets closed mixed. The Nikkei and Hang Seng barely going anywhere today. This morning, we got a couple of positive numbers from the government. The Commerce Department says retail sales increased by 0.5% in May, by the largest amount in 4 months. Jobless claims fell last week. At the same time, though, oil prices are higher, and we have another round of Treasury note auctions that could give us a better idea of what's happening with interest rates. Bill Stone is Chief Investment Strategist at PNC Wealth Management. He's with us live this morning from Philly. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
So this is something you're calling a big tug of war. I mean, what the heck is going on with interest rates with the latest Treasury auction?
Well, it's a combination of better economic data would lead to, or generally always leads to higher interest rates in the sense that people want more return on their money when they're expecting that they can maybe make more elsewhere. So that's a given. I think the concern is with the amount of debt that the government's continually having to issue, and there's a big 30-year auction this afternoon, as you mentioned, that perhaps some of the inflation expectations are getting built into there. Then you have combined in here some of those rising energy costs. And the worry is that eventually maybe that goes too far and really smothers what's still a fragile economic recovery.
And retail sales, Bill, something that the market really looks to get a picture of the health of the economy. Are the worries that you're talking about taking the wind out of the report that May sales were better quickly?
Yeah, I think a little bit. You know, also underneath it, there wasn't a lot of discretionary spending in the retail sales report, so that it wasn't quite as good as even on the surface.
All right. Bill Stone joining us from Philly. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
The number of the newly unemployed, as I mentioned, seeking benefits fell last week, but the number of people continuing to claim benefit checks has risen once again to the highest level on record, 6.8 million. And people cite a lot of different unemployment figures to try and gauge where the economy is and see if the recession is receding. Economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now to talk about the job market and what those barometers say about the broader economy. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So what about all this talk about the recession winding down?
Oh, I think the recession is winding down. And most notably, Paul Krugman, Nobel laureate, New York Times economist, he says, look, when the dating committee at the National Bureau of Economic Research says the recession ended, they'll look back and they'll say it was sometime in the summer.
Yeah, well, if it's over, Chris, then what about this unemployment report we got last week? You know, 9.4% unemployment. That's big.
Well, the unemployment number really matters to all of us for obvious reasons. But it's what economists call a lagging indicator that's one of the last things to improve as the economy comes out of recession and enters into this recovery. So I got another number for you to focus on. It deals with employment, but it's a leading indicator.
What's that?
It's the initial unemployment claims. And this is the American workers get handed a pink slip. They go down to the unemployment office and they file claims for jobless benefits. And the good news here is that the initial unemployment claims number has been trending down since mid-March. And what that signals is that companies are starting to say, times are getting better. I'm going to keep this workforce that I have. Oh, by the way, I'm going to work them a little harder.
So wouldn't it be harder then to look at these leading economic indicators? So you've got to put a little more thought into it as opposed to these doom and gloom numbers such as the unemployment report that came out last week.
That's right. And by the way, with any economic number, you can't make too much of any 1 week or any 1 month. So when you're looking at the initial unemployment claims, just as you said, you're looking at the trend. I mean, this has been going on from mid-March. So you don't look at any 1 week. You look at the trend.
So in the end, Chris, how do these numbers serve us?
Two ways. One, the recession is bottoming out and there's a recovery that is forming. Secondly, it is going to be a long time before jobs are created. I think this is going to be another jobless recovery. And therefore, everyone who's listening to this has to be prepared for a jobless recovery, not a recovery that will generate a lot of employment.
All right. Economics correspondent Chris Farrell joining us. And we can hear you on Marketplace Money, too.
That's right. And we'll have more thoughts about how what's happening in the economy is affecting your wallet.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, June 11th, 2009 at Marketplace.org. May foreclosure filings are down from April. That's the latest word from RealtyTrack this morning. But there's not much reason to celebrate, as Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Foreclosures dropped 6% from April's record high, but May numbers were up 18% from the year before. It's now the third highest foreclosure month on record. Nevada, California, and Florida still have the highest rates in the country. But Rick Sharga of RealtyTrack says foreclosures are going up in states like Idaho, Oregon, and Utah.
The majority of new foreclosures appear to be unemployment-related as opposed to the subprime adjustable rate loan problem that we've been dealing with the last couple of years.
Sharga says one in every 398 homes received a foreclosure filing last month. He says the government's initiatives to keep people in their homes haven't had enough time to kick in. RealtyTrack forecasts around 4 million foreclosure filings will be made this year. That's up from 3 million last year. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
IndyCar driver Danica Patrick is reportedly evaluating her racing options. Patrick's free to start negotiating her contract with Indy this week, and rumors are that she's seriously considering a move to NASCAR. It would be a bigger stage for Patrick and a big coup for stock car racing. Joel Rose reports.
Danica Patrick is the first woman to win an IndyCar event, but she's at least as well known for her exploits off the track, like a series of racy commercials for GoDaddy.com.
Miss Patrick?
Yes. I've enhanced.
Miss Patrick.
It's true. I've enhanced my image with a domain name and a website.
NASCAR officials may be hoping Patrick will enhance their image, too. Larry DeGaris teaches sports marketing at the University of Indianapolis. He says after a decline in ratings and attendance this year, NASCAR could use Patrick's star power more than ever.
If you can bring more big-name sponsors on board who are going to put money behind leveraging their relationship with Danica, that's good for the sport on several levels.
Marketing executives say Patrick could bring millions of dollars in new sponsorships. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
People in Chicago are riled up about parking costs, which have as much as quadrupled since the city leased control of its meters to a private company. The deal is raising questions about when, why, and how privatizing public services makes sense. From Chicago Public Radio, Adrian Hill reports.
If you want to hear Chicago drivers get all worked up, just ask them about parking meters.
There looks like it's $3.50 an hour, though. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's absurd.
That's Stanley King. He's parking a silver Lexus in Chicago's downtown and trying to figure out how to use one of the new parking meters.
If I need a half an hour, that's what, $1.75? Seven quarters. How many did that bring?
He calls the city's rush to privatize a joke. And drivers aren't the only ones expressing frustration with the deal, for which the city was paid nearly $1.2 billion. Chicago Mayor Richard Daley's been called out by the city inspector general for rushing the contract that gives control of the meters away for 75 years. But Daley stands by it. He says the money he's made leasing out pieces of the city's infrastructure is essential to Chicago's financial health.
Now, if we didn't have these, if I didn't have the Skyway deal, the parking garages, the parking meters, we'd be in terrible positions.
In addition to leasing some of the city's tollways and parking structures, Daley's also pushed to privatize Midway Airport in a deal that fell through at the last minute because of the collapse in the credit market. It's a rush to sell that Columbia University economist Elliot Sklar call short-sighted.
You have a government that doesn't want to deal with the question of raising taxes to provide services. So it's essentially, it's a short-run expedient. After they've sold everything off, what do they do in the second year? What's the next act?
Do members of the public ever benefit from these privatization deals in terms of, do fees actually ever go down when infrastructure is privatized?
Conceptually, anything can happen, but I'm not aware of it.
Sklar says he thinks we'll start seeing a move away from cities and states selling their assets to private companies as the public starts to realize there are things the government can and should do well. In Chicago, I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Cost may be one of the biggest obstacles holding up a nuclear energy revival. Now, one company hopes to solve that problem by making smaller, less expensive reactors. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Sam Eaton.
If you're in the market for a nuclear reactor these days, you're pretty much stuck with a 1,000-megawatt model that'll run you about $10 billion. That's because building bigger typically brings the cost per watt down. But Christopher Mowry with the nuclear energy company Babcock & Wilcox says the high price has kept all but the largest utilities out of the market.
You're basically betting the company when you make that type of investment. So we're creating an option here that is affordable by a broader nuclear utility and industrial base.
The key here is that Mowry's reactors are modular. Utilities can start small, then plug in additional modules as demand rises. Each unit is a self-contained reactor like those used on nuclear submarines. Harvard energy policy expert Matthew Bunn says the idea holds promise, but
the history of the nuclear age is littered with promising reactor projects that didn't pan out.
And Bunn says until this new technology is officially approved by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it's too early to say whether this time will be any different. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Head of Bank of America Ken Lewis faces a fresh grilling before a congressional panel today. The hearing about the bank's purchase of Merrill Lynch gets underway in a few minutes. Here's Marketplace's Bob Moon.
It's beginning to sound like the U.S. government's efforts to head off a global financial collapse last September had all the markings of a scene from Mission Impossible.
The secretary will disavow all knowledge of your actions.
Kenneth Lewis suggests that kind of scenario in testimony he's prepared for lawmakers today. The B of A chief claims former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and Fed Chief Ben Bernanke pressured him to go through with the deal for Merrill Lynch. Lewis says he had serious second thoughts over what he now calls significant accelerating losses at the brokerage. Secretary Paulson has said he left it up to Lewis whether to disclose his doubts to B of A investors. What lawmakers want to know is why then did Lewis sign off on the deal with this kind of enthusiastic pitch to his stockholders?
This was a unique opportunity to acquire a high-quality company that will not only greatly enhance our long-term prospects, but truly creates a firm that is unparalleled in the industry.
Emails turned up by congressional investigators, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, appear to support Lewis's claim that he felt pressured by top government officials to put the best face on the deal. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Hey, hope you can join us at our website, the Scratch Pad, there, and you can share your thoughts with our online host and blogger, Scott J. Gow, inside Marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.